Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about practical projects update, as opposed to automation updates. These are practical projects that I'm pursuing. So the projects obviously aren't completed, and if they're a practical project, they sort of get over and done with rather quickly. The first one I'll talk about is the scale model of our local star area on the scale of 1 to a trillion. So 1 whatever equals a trillion whatever. And I was sort of looking at this because it's a sort of very physical model, and rather than conceptually saying, imagine actually placing something permanently at the different locations. And so at the 1 to a trillion, you get that the sun, which is 1.3 trillion kilometres across, million kilometres across, at a 1 to a trillion, which is a million. So it's 1 to a million, 1 to a 1,000 million, which is a billion. 1 to a trillion is 1 to a million million. The sun is 1.3 centimetres across. And then our nearest neighbouring star and is Proxima Centauri, or Alpha Centauri C. So Proxima Centauri is also part of the Alpha Centauri system, but it has three stars, A, B, and C. A is a little bit brighter than our sun. B is a bit dimmer than our sun. And C is a dwarf, red dwarf star in its system. And what you do is you type it in your search engine. You say here, Proxima Centauri, distance to Proxima Centauri in kilometres. And then it will say 40.6 trillion kilometres. And if it's a scale 1 to a trillion, you just remove the trillion and it's 40.1 kilometres away. This is our next nearest star. And it's rather interesting that a trillion kilometres, the actual SI unit for a trillion kilometres, I sort of rather like this because it sort of avoids the light year. The light year is a tricky unit to get your head around. But the other, a slightly better unit, is the petakilometre. I sort of also like it. So it's capital P, petameter. And I like that because it's a capital P and an M, so big P, M. And I sort of like that. That's it's Peter Meter. Peter Meter. So I sort of like that because I'm Peter Hill. I like that. I sort of also like that there's a Hungarian astronomer called Peter Hell. And P-A-T-E-R-H-E-L-L. And it sounds like Peter Hill. That's particularly the way Australians call it. And that's going back. So, this means on my grand plan of at the local visitors centre up here, seeing if I can weasel in getting a small display, a small poster with a little cashew stuck onto it. And this is a scale, a model of the sun, 1 to a trillion. And the nearest star is 40 point something or other kilometres away. And I've just been on Google Earth. And as the crows fly, I've looked around. And there's, rather than Sydney, because there's too many landmarks in Sydney and we want to encourage tourism, I picked a point 40 kilometres up the road as the crow flies. And that actually takes you right across the mountains, so the mountains aren't that big. 40 kilometres is not that big. On the road, So there's a there's two valley systems. There's the Jameson Valley and the Gross Valley, named after white dudes, of course. You can sort of go up the ridge of hills between it. So there's one ridge of hills to go up, go round the next valley, and you can go down. And on the road there, so that's right across the Blue Mountains, I propose, after getting this thing, a little board, poster board, with Alpha Centauri, a little ball, and a little explanation, Alpha Centauri C or Proxima, and then 1 kilometre further up the road, you've got Alpha and Beta Centauri, and they're between 1 and 5 metres apart, depending on their orbiting time. So you have two posters, and they're suddenly 2 metres apart, or 5 metres apart, which is okay, just up on trees on the highway. Now, surely, we've got to work out whether people can object to it. So this is my overall plan, sort of thin through the wedge of actual transcending museum exhibits. So the majority of ideas is that you have a museum exhibit and exists in a certain floor space. And the floor space of this exhibit is the surface of the Earth. So we've got that. Alpha Centauri B and C are 41.4. I really can't remember. This is where I can definitely see cognitively. I've sort of dipped down a bit, so I read a number. I go next, and I can't remember the last couple of digits, so I have to keep on going back and forth. Sometimes I need to change them. So I've got on Google Earth these positions, and I'll put a few shots up in the blog for you to look at. And so there's that. Well, let's talk. That's the stars, and that pointed to the Southern Cross. Let's, on the same scale, where Sirius is. Sirius is the brightest star in the sky, and there's a beautiful coast road up from Sydney. Goes through spectacular country, through Gosford and places up like that. So this is towards the next ports up from Sydney, which is at Port Jackson. So Sydney Harbour's Port Jackson, and I originally had thought of positioning things in landmarks in Sydney, but the problem is that Sydney is very cluttered. So if you had your thing, so the advantage of this is that the Glenbrook Visitor Centre doesn't have an awful lot going on in it. Besides not having a lot going on, if you pick up a bush road, it's nothing's happening except you can watch and there it is. You can have a bit of conversation about it. Whereas if you're in the middle of traffic, there's no conversation about it. So, where do we, what is it, I really can't remember whether it was, our nearest star is 40 kilometres away. The brightest star is either 60 or 80 kilometres away. I've got to really scratch my head. You just type in the distance to Sirius, there's one other star that you put in there, which is Betelgeuse, which is pretty much the closest red giant. And on the scale of Betelgeuse is a red giant, so the scale of our cashew, which is a tiny little ball bearing, Betelgeuse is What is it? I think it's a billion, a billion kilometers, 1.3 billion kilometers across. Now, a billion kilometers in the trillion scale is 1.3 meters. The diameter, it's just type in diameter of Betelgeuse. So Betelgeuse is the Arab for armpit. So it's interesting that there's the Orion, which is a Hunter. It's all looking very good. The Australians reconvert it the other way. We tend to put the head where you put the swords and all this type of stuff because it's upside down. And not deliberately, it's just that people naturally, when they put a star symbol, they sometimes, oh, that's upside down. Well, sometimes they look the right way up, up from here. So Betelgeuse is a red giant, sort of a very distinctive star. I think it's a bit of a romantic pink-coloured star, if you want a red, a rose-coloured star. And that's, I do remember this. Well, I actually don't. Is it? Oh, yeah, 6,080 kilometres away. You get on Google Earth and you look what is 6,880 kilometres away from us. And this is an island in the Philippines. Well, this is a city in the Philippines. And so this is the arc length. And so it sort of gets you thinking about arc length and direct length. So I haven't put in direct length, but the diameter, the core of the Earth happens to be 6,800 kilometres away. So Betelgeuse could actually, you could alternatively place it in the centre of the Earth. And this is, I don't know, if you place information at various points, it's, here's a beautiful possum. Ah, boy, what are you doing? You gonna hang around? Oops, off you go. Sorry, I'm walking around at night, seeing these pretty crazy houses with the Christmas lights on. It's just before Christmas. We've got all that, happening. I think that's got certain things happening. It's got a binary star, a triple star system, the brightest star, and Betelgeuse. It's got a fair amount of things, and Sirius Major, when you really look at it, you've got twin star systems, you've got white dwarfs, you've got everything really quickly in that set of things. You've got the age of the stars, what's happening, where they've got planets around them, all this additional detail which you can get. Now, ideally, what you'd want to do is encode the information so that you can get it by geocaching or writing and completing a quiz about the star or what you can see from certain areas. Let's say a quiz about the Blue Mountains, you get a information out. And so this is sort of separate maps. One is education theory, where you start to look at the lesson and devolve it from the system, devolve it from the school, devolve it from the audience, devolve it from institutions, and see if you can actually place the information ex media. So for every condition that you create for information, you have these gateways for it. One is, say, if it's the media, it's broadcasted in very small links. if it's on the internet, it's in competition with various things. If it's in the school syllabus, you've got restricted requirements, conflicts, but so there, in terms of the actual information space, it's getting it out there, and it's not overloading the information. There's a very small set of information you'd like to go across, and initially the first step is really, really small, which is just going out to the Glenbrook Information Centre, and I've got to really think, scratch, if they say no, you've got to actually do, to actually sort it such you don't say no, it's a proposal, it's be looked at, integrated response, get in line with the process there. So there are all these different systems, but they're basically one to the trillion scale. Once you get that, I think we can really have this as an established scale and the understanding of whether you want to do it this way. So that's one practical project. And of course, practically what I've done, or I have actually done a little bit of research on it, a bit of thinking about it, and practically I have done very little for it. I'm just trying to think of graphics to get going. And this sort of really, in terms of education space, is looking ways forward. So I've got this complicated way forward of podcasts and automated quizzes, and for that there's a whole lot of things that have to happen. That is where I step back, and the expertise is the actual quiz automation and placing that in the correct situations. But there is are these barriers for people looking it up, and so that's a major thing for me, looking at the barriers going ahead and what you can practically do, and trying to get the smallest cross section possible to get things going. So I've got so for this one, it's to do thorough research. In fact, look, I was just actually walking past the Glenbrook Visitor Centre, so I'll see if it's actually up and running. So they've put a fair amount of money into it. You know, where it could be done, it's a big, big question. And to have it, I don't know, a work in progress to go ahead. So I'm just walking past. I've got this pretty sort of out of its world, over the top LED lit car park, and there's someone who's obviously been driving for too long. It's having a bit of a sleep in the car park. I think the police can arrest you. Oh, the police can't arrest you for sleeping. And here's a pioneer wall, which they've rebuilt, and the various little wall with pioneering families up here. There's a walk. There's a whole series of features. There's a representation of the Blue Mountains in different ways. There's the an actual sort of raised and lowering staircases to represent it. So it really goes in with it, and there's a series of concrete slabs which represents the Blue Mountains and the explanation. So they've got, it is actually a centre which is aiming to do this sort of thing, and it is closed, and I don't know. What is a boring place though? They've made it, they've rebuilt it, and it's a bit more open, but it's not much a big, it's not much of a big advance on what was there before. Really, it's a bit more open, but it's a bit more natural lighting, but it's like it's 20% larger. But there's some sort of meeting room at the front they've done, so they've sort of snuck in an extra room there. And there's a big wall out the front with the word Glenbrook. So I sort of, it's the, there is actually a concept of things, and there's a, GWL, oh, Blackson, Wentworth and Lawson, these are the people going over the mountains to celebrate it. It's pretty weird. I'm actually walking on top of this monument, which has got miners and fossils, and I don't know what the heck. This is a bit of flowering putting into it. Okay, that actually been done. So that's the one update, and it's all planning. Oh, she is. That would be an ideal point for it. I can see him. Okay, so the second area of planning is the Einstein to Haas pendulum. Okay, so I put out a call to my buddies, and my buddies are not, these are professors and stuff like that, saying, I'm here, I want to do this. Too busy, I'll deflect you to here, and everyone else says, I'm too busy to look at this very simple pendulum. So the idea is a ferrite rod in an oscillating magnetic field. You flip the spin by flipping the magnetic field, and this spin flip means an angular momentum kick. And if you time it to this rod, which is suspended, it'll begin to oscillate. Now, I began to construct this out of... I built a jig out of aluminium extrusion called 8020 in Australia. I think it's 8020 in the US as well. It's this basic lab extrusion stuff, and I had mountains of it from a factory, and just naturally had a bit left in the shed from about 20 years ago. So I managed to get that going up, and to get the plug system, I had got some Qantas free plugs, earphones from a flight, picked those up, and restructured there. And interestingly, as I'm getting over the brain things, my ability, my dexterity has improved. That's a big bonus, isn't it? Well, yeah, like normally as you get older, dexterity gets worse. It's only required glasses on. So I could solve it. It's sort of strange in that you still have sort of methodologies to do things that sort of comes up and problem solves. So I basically have got a relay which can flip the current. I still haven't got it there, but I began to do it, and I have this, it's about a metre, and it suspends this ferrite rod. And the ferrite rod is got a cable bound to it, and the cable's affixed to it with tape, polymer tape. The polymer tape is made of Teflon, and so it's all these things that sort of the natural skills sets again, where you don't actually consciously think, you just go through places and it sort of assembles itself. But you might do a little bit of solving. Like the bolts are very rusty. Put it through, I've only got one Allen key which fits it all. Put it together, and important thing is it's just a sort of like a little hat stand with a T, a USB microscope linked up to it. So the way to see oscillations, a fraction of a degree oscillation, so have a microscope look at some aspect of this, and I then created a magnetic field of a coil of wire. I just basically had some wire on a reel with a hollow center, so I just stuck the ferrite core in this hollow wire, put wire across, and fortunately, I sort of know that dipoles and everything go in field gradients. Magnetic attraction is Well, the magnetic force is a torque force, but then if you get something moving in a magnetic field, it's the fact that you've got a magnetic field gradient. And what happened is that in this small little section, if you the pendulum just goes a bit off to the side, it detects a field gradient and moves from side to side, so there's a field gradient there. So thus what you want to do is get a very big coil such that the field gradient is spread out, so you'll be able to see that. You want to see that there, so you don't want to push across. So the small little coil is not good, and so the big coil of something you see on the internet is the way to go. And you can sort of see the reason why the internet one has this huge coil to provide a uniform field gradient, which is, I suppose, is interesting. But of course I don't have that option quite yet, and so I've gone on to plan B here, and that's to wrap the coil directly around the ferrite rod. So the ferrite rods are something you can go in and buy from a local electronics shop for winding up antenna along the way. And so I've just wrapped it around there. And that has the problem that you've got the springiness of the wires holding it in. And so the big question is whether you coil the wires, make them springs, therefore they've got very little restoring force associated with it. So also for this, I've got the ferrite rod, which has the great susceptibility, no eddy currents in it, because it's so it's a ferrite rod. It's basically a compounded rod, I suppose. It's press molded, so I don't know, it must be sintered ferrite material. I don't know how it's actually made. And so this is rather than a laminated core, this is the you have ferrite core resistors. So, and look, I really don't know about how well this will work, but it's a light material, and it's by having it dangling down, you're using that a small localized field will go into it, and the field applied at one point will be channeled down the entire ferrite rod. So hopefully it will it's sort of ideal. Now, because it's so light, so small, I've got it hanging down. It's got an oscillation of about 5 hertz. It really pops back and forth, and that's ideal, because your greater your oscillation frequency, the more bites you get at moving it. So it's relatively stiff, and so I'm hopefully getting in on there. I've sort of looked at it. I guess I flick the current back and forth manually, and so what I've done here, similar to the other one of creating a scale space model at the Glenbrook Centre, given that they have a whole series of spatial representations of Glenbrook. I suppose Glenbrook's place in our galaxy, Galactic Glenbrook, that would be where it's going. This Einstein's pendulum is is trying to get the experiment very simple, and I took it up to my mate Bill, King Bill, and he was he's an SES volunteer. So there's been pretty massive storms throughout Sydney, so he was called out, so he wasn't there. But I showed this to his wife, who showed me off her chainsawing skills. She didn't get out a chainsaw, but she's also in the SES, and One of the major things is to control traffic is one thing. So if there's a danger, there's normally generally a tree's fallen down, power lines have gone out, there's sort of disaster flooding, so the SES will come to your property with portable pumps, pump it out, or if the tree's fallen down, they'll cut it out. And so she showed me her various feats that you have to do to show your you can actually handle these are they're people in their 50s, right? So they're not spring chickens, and they just quietly go out there, and when there's a disaster, they're volunteers, they just turn up and clean up everything. So if a tree falls through your roof in a storm, within the storm passing, within hours, you have the tarps up and the trees cut down, the roads cleared up. It's just general, or say if there's a bushfire been through, the SES, State Emergency Service, will come through and check all the trees. Because if one of the things is that after a bushfire comes through, you, for a week or so after, you hear this of trees falling down or rocks exploding. It's a pretty stunning thing to happen. She saw it, and it's fairly simple. It's just a wire, a thing, a few across, and this is again on the area of getting people up to feed in or come in to the automated quiz. This is different people approach the software, the people with the content, the people with the production skills, the people with the distribution skills come back and produce a fact, and then your, I suppose, education experts then manage that the asset. So that's really highbrow stuff. But the Einstein pendulum, which I'm going to get going slowly. Now, it's sort of rather hard. I myself don't feel, intuitively, I don't feel it's going to work. I feel sort of this half of me which understands all equations, and it does predict, and I do predict spectra and interpret spectra. It makes sense, but there's always sort of behind two or three layers of physics. The thing with this Einstein pendulum, it's directly in front of you. You can definitely see it. And I suppose when I explained it to her, it was, it will work. You sort of have to know how a motor does work to see this is not working. And it's basically, well, Einstein allows you, it gives you a calling card in, especially if I have a little couple of micron across Einstein's head portrait. So I think if I can just manage this slowly, I can get various people. There's a nano fabrication laboratory at Sydney University, so if I can nano etch an Einstein head on my ferrite rod, not a nano etch, you know, a millimeter, sub millimeter full stop, which is looks like Einstein's head. That's going to be great. The microscope looks at it, and you can just see it move. It doesn't have to move much. It just has to move a little bit in the magnetic field. You would, this is a great thing. The mechanical thing about it is that throughout space, you need a rocket, you need conservation of linear momentum, so the rocket juice goes out their back, the exhaust goes out, the momentum is conserved, and the rocket runs forward. So normally, if you want to do a Catherine wheel, so a Catherine wheel is a wheel with rockets pointing tangential, so it spins up and the rocket starts to go across. For some reason, people have associated that with, well, people are now explaining it to me, Roman times, but in Roman times, I really don't understand. I suppose it must have been, oh, I don't know, I suppose it could have burnt something and put it on a wheel or something like that. I'm not quite sure why they associated it with Romans. But in general, to get angular momentum in any turbine or anything like that, you get this rock. So if I get something speeding up, the car will buck back, or something along those lines. Or if I have a drill, it will, if I suddenly increase the torque, it will kick back. But the thing with this pendulum is it's just a rod. There are no moving parts, obviously. But, the pendulum is a moving part, obviously, but there's nothing there. It's not, the pendulum itself doesn't feel the stand here. Doesn't hear anything. There's something really weird just switched on there. Some sort of light which is just switched on, making a hell of a lot of noise. You've got all this coming together. The thing is that it's actually, what is it grabbing to spin itself against? Well, you could say the electrons have intrinsic angular momentum, but its intrinsic angular momentum is a function of the universe. It's actually grabbing on and rotating. It's pulling itself against space. It's pulling itself against the entire universe. I rather like this experiment because it is like a keyhole to get through. And as with the visitor center, it's just slowly building up the asset until you get ignition. Similar to the podcasting, you slowly build it up, slowly build the audience up until you tweak it. At the moment, I've got it going on Feedburner, getting some sort of advice about how to actually promote it. I will get across, slowly get across, but the if it sort of makes sense, there's no point in promoting it before I've actually ironed out all the software issues, which I think I have. And you can't iron out the software issues unless you're actually pumping through a lot of podcasts to see how it goes. And in general, there's one parameter that I've got, which is the actual mechanics of getting it out there. That's fairly stable, but the actual production and other quality issues like white spaces, background noises, I suppose production issues. Okay, so there's this thing sitting on a fence, so it's a thong. Look like some sort of weird bird. There's one time I was actually walking here, I saw this bird walking up the street, and I didn't see it really properly. It turned out to be one of these plovers, but when I first saw it, looked like a penguin, and we actually do have penguins as far north here up in Sydney, but sort of not up in the Blue Mountains. Penguins would be very wrong, but of course it wasn't. That's a small side as I walk home. That's the practical aspect of it. And with all things like this, people coming up to Christmas, it's pack away your Einstein's pendulum, get that off, and the sort of folded arms, that's just really rubbish. And you think, well, it's like winning the battle there is not going to be going in. Now, one of the, I suppose, what I was thinking in terms of battles. Some of the things I just a new military term I've come up with is you've got I was reading about amphibious landings. I'm reading it up about Gallipoli and how that was a failure, but how that fed into a whole series of, that was really the first modern amphibious landing. It just stalemated it. It was a whole series of mistakes which was examined and went into D-Day and went into the Pacific. That sort of logic of Gallipoli is very, very well studied. And there's four phases. So the landing, the demonstration, the assault, the withdrawal. What does demonstration mean? No one's ever told me what the heck does that mean? But in a certain extent, there's the landing. You're in a stalemate, but you've got to, while stalemate in one dimension here, of not being able to progress, you've got to think in other dimensions. And the other dimensions I'm thinking of is how to actually get this idea and put it into the transcendental zone, that is, things which start to move away from basically competing controls. So I can't put this in the school system because there's competing controls of how that operates. So there's that issue to try and move it out of the competition zone. I can't get a university to build an Einstein pendulum because I don't have the impetus of a group they're interested in talking to. They're really just not interested in talking to me. So the issue is to just quietly progress these practical ideas with the minimum of fuss and the minimum of cross-section. It's sort of like a stealth operation. It's in stealth. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm going home now to my house. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.